You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
What's up, guys? Today's guest is singer-songwriter James Bourne. He is a huge inspiration of mine. Incredible singer-songwriter of the band Busted. He wrote the year 3000, which was also used for Jonas Brothers. We get into that in the conversation. He was in another rock band called Son of Dork. He wrote a musical called Ticket Out of Loserville. So if you like the podcast, please give this video a like. Comment down below who else we should reach out to and who we should get. Make sure to subscribe, and I hope you enjoy this conversation with the rock star, James Bourne. What's up, Lightweights Podcast? Today we have James Bourne, lead singer, songwriter of the rock band Busted. They sold over 5 million copies and they are currently underway for their next tour. The band Busted has achieved 4 number one singles, won 2 Brit Awards, sold out Wembley Arena 11 nights in a row. They've released 4 studio albums, sold over 5 million copies, and their band was so big that they were cited as the reason for an increase in guitar sales. Ladies and gentlemen, James Bourne.
Yeah, I remember that. That was Christmas 2002. No, yeah, Christmas 2002 or 3. I think it was 2. I went into, you know, the place, which, by the way, is closed now, which is really kind of heartbreaking because I bought all my stuff from there. And as I walk in, you know, it's a place called PMT. It was in Southend High Street, just off of Southend High Street. And as I walk in, there are these two guys. I could never really figure out if they were brothers or if they were related, but they were interesting characters. And, you know, they were always there. And I walk in and one of them points at me as I walk in. And he, just, you know, the band is like having its first big crisp, like, yeah, we've been big in, since September, our first song. We hadn't released Year 3000 yet, but maybe it was on, I think it might have been on the like MTV already. And we go in and the guy points at me and he goes, "You, you're the reason we're selling so many guitars." Cause like that year it was like, you know, like every Christmas, like 1 year Buzz Lightyear was the thing. And Every Christmas there was a thing, and that Christmas it was just guitars, and they were like, "Yeah, I think a lot of this is down to Busted," and so that was kind of interesting to see that effect. Yeah.
At the time you guys released it, guitars weren't necessarily as much on the radio. Being in a rock band,
they weren't on the. It wasn't like it wasn't at all. I mean, obviously, like you had, you know what it was in the '90s. Obviously, you had like Blur and Oasis, and they were real bands. But there was sort of a different lane for those bands. Those bands were marketed down this, you know, real music lane. And then there was sort of a different lane for pop music, that things like in the 90s, like the end of the 90s, things like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and all of the copycat boy bands in England. You know, there was an avenue for, like, I guess, more of a record company generated thing, and we definitely were pushed down that lane. But that lane kind of hit like I think a wider audience that necessarily wasn't used to the guitar thing at all, and we would show up to play, you know, radio shows with a lot of other bands, and there would be nobody playing guitar. It would all be just a bunch of people that had their act that was like, we're singing to a track, and we don't have a band. There's no drummer. There's nothing. They were just like karaoke almost, like people with mics. And we would show up to these shows, and there was just kind of a big change after that. Like, people just kind of felt like, you know, people would stand and they would watch us do our thing, and they would be like, "Oh, I guess this is where it's going," because we would get a good response at all these things. And as the band got bigger and built an audience, I think people look to us in the pop world as, you know, a band that was making the guitars relevant to like that market, you know.
Because at that time too, you were 20 years old, 21?
But yeah, well, younger, like probably 19 at that point.
Were you able to see this is your way in because no one else was doing it?
I didn't really look at it like that because, you know, we liked Blink 182 and we liked, you know, I always, and I liked Oasis when I was like young, and I liked Nirvana and Green Day and I liked those bands. But I also liked, you know, boy bands. I didn't have a problem with the Backstreet Boys. I thought their songs were amazing. And I thought NSYNC was amazing. So I never really had, I didn't really go into the music thinking I have to be this way or has to be seen this way. I was just sort of happy that I was not having to go to college. You know, I was like, my whole thing was like, I just don't want to go to college.
Yeah.
That was my biggest thing. And, you know, I guess I used whatever musical songwriting ability I had to escape a normal life. It was like, I don't want to go and work in a normal place. I want to do something that excites me. I want to do something that's fun. And if that meant, you know, if Busted had been an all singing, all dancing boy band, that would have been good enough for me.
Yeah.
I would have taken that. It's just that I think what we stood for was, you know, we never really intended or planned for it to be that way. But I think that we ended up standing for something that was really valuable for younger people that looked up to our band. You know, because we had a lot of young fans that were young teenagers, like 13-year-olds, you know, 12-year-olds, young, and you know, like people that come up to me still today, and they say like how much of a big effect, you know, the band had on them wanting to do music or learning an instrument, or, and that's amazing stuff. But you know, I was just, you know, grateful that I was doing music, you know.
What was the first time like when people would come up to you asking for your autograph, trying to take pictures with you?
It was actually quite weird. And you know, like the first time you get asked for a picture, you hang around like for way too long with the person.
What else can you do
like,
for you?
yeah, like you write like an essay on the thing and. you take like 5 pictures from different angles and you're just so stoked that's happening.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously it's always like, you know, and then that doesn't happen really like all the time. It happens if we're doing something or we're in the zone with the band, or if we're on tour, then obviously all the time.
Right.
But rarely still. I mean, even out here, like, I do get a few people, I'm surprised, I'm shocked at, like, what they know. Because you forget that when you put music out, it's forever, kind of. Like, it's weird that you know about my other band.
Son of Dork.
Yeah, it's weird that you know that. Like, when I'm always surprised when people know that. But, you know, we did have, like, a little bit of a moment, too. But it was very, like, overshadowed by, you know, when you're in a band like Busted and... you know, ended very suddenly. You know, the three of us, we all got record deals afterwards because the band was that successful. And, you know, we all could do really whatever we wanted with that record deal. I could have done whatever I wanted, whatever kind of project I wanted to do. And I loved being in the band so much, I just wanted to do another band. Which probably wasn't the best idea, you know, because the dynamic of having been in Busted and then being in a new band with 4 new people, so it was even more band members. I think I was on a major, like, Newfound Glory hype at the time, and I just wanted to create more of a bigger, like, 5-piece band, or even, I probably would have made it a 6-piece if they would have let me. But like, stop now, like, it's too much members. And I didn't care. I was just like, no, it's gonna be like Newfound Glory. But I think it just ended up being sort of like, you know, something that kind of, the songs kind of resembled Busted a little bit because I was writing them, but it wasn't, because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the three of us, it was this new band. So, but you know, it's funny because, you know, the album actually did well, kind of. But I think it wasn't well enough for the record company to be excited for it to keep on going. And my relationship, we did tour, we did keep touring for a little bit, but my relationship with the other guys in the band, I don't think was strong enough with all the members for me to want to, like, I don't know. At that point, I was so tired. You know, it'd been like a lot of years, and I kind of just wanted to travel and come to America and live in New York and come to Los Angeles more, because we came here with Busted and also with Son of Dork. You know, we did a lot of sessions and I made a lot of friends during that time, and it was fun. You know, I just wanted to come back and with nothing in my schedule and just relax a little bit.
When you had Son of Dork, I remember it was a roller coaster for me because I was craving new music, and I found Busted.
Right.
And I was so stoked, and I found two albums, and then I dove into it, and I found out you guys just broke up. Then I found out you had Son of Dork, and I was thrilled. And then I found out Son of Dork was ended. But then I started following your whole journey, and I remember it was at the time we had a mutual buddy, and he was doing a show with this band, All Star Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned how I love this UK band. And he asked who it was. I said, Busted. And I said, Son of Dork. He's like, that's James Warren's band. I'm like, yeah. He's like, we need him to sign some contracts with us. I'm like, shut up. He's like, he's in New York right now. I'm like, you're lying. Then we ended up going out to lunch with you. And we went to MoMA together the very next day. And I got to hang out with you the entire day. And I was just on cloud nine.
This was in New York.
New York, yeah. Like 10 years ago.
Yeah, man, I love New York. You know, I've had like such an insane life, like living in New York, and I would like to spend more time in New York. But I remember that day, I think. Cuz this was with All Star Weekend.
Yes.
Yeah.
They were doing the Walmart sound check.
That's right. Yeah, because it's crazy how I came into like contact with that band, because you know, there was a 3-piece band and Tom Norris was in it.
Yep.
Do you remember that?
That was before I met them.
Right.
He was away. I knew of him.
Because Tom is still a friend of mine. And I could not, I actually feel like I got to witness some majorly amazing stuff with them. Because I was bought in quite early because they wanted to write a song like Year 3000. And we wrote the song Journey to the End of My Life, which I feel like is kind of like a new song modeled on Year 3000, just the way that the structure of it and everything. And Tom was this band member, but he was recording their demos. But he was recording their demos on a laptop that had missing keys.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Like lying on the floor, not even sitting at a desk, like lying on his like stomach on the floor, like just like with, I'm thinking, how does he not have like a desk, or how is he doing that? How is he able to make this song sound like that? I'd never seen anything like it. I thought the band was amazing, but and all the members were super easy to get on with, but I just couldn't stop wondering how this 16-year-old kid had this like capability to make something sound like it could go on the radio with no equipment. I mean, it's not the wand, it's the wizard, right? And that's, he's like, it was like proof of that. And I was like, this is not normal. And he actually got kicked out of the band. I can't remember what happened with him.
Something like that.
He, you know, he was destined for something else because, you know, he just had this amazing talent to make things sound good. And I think it was like years and years went by after he like went out the band, and I reached out to him on Facebook. This was when I was doing Mook Busted at this point. And I said to him, hey, man, what are you doing? Please, how are you doing? What are you doing these days? Please tell me it's music. And he said, yeah, it's music. I'm doing some music stuff. I was like, oh, great. And then he starts telling me what he's working on. And, you know, it's like, yeah, Rihanna. I'm doing, you know, like the biggest stuff in the world, is basically.
They have a Taylor Swift cut, too.
Well, and probably he's done everything. He did that. He did that. He mixed the Lady Gaga song for Top Gun.
Unreal.
And that was like just recently. And it's like so crazy that I saw him start out where he was, working on that song together. You know, for the band that he would eventually not be in, but he would go on to have this, you know, amazing career. So I think, and actually it's funny because like people want to talk about, like when I do interviews, like, and people ask about Busted, or they ask about, some people want to talk about Son of Dork. Some of the stuff that's happened, like in like the 10 years really between Son of Dork and McBusted happening, when I was just out here doing stuff, those are some of the craziest stories, you know, because, I was sort of like involved in so many things that, like, behind the scenes, you know, not really as a fronting band member, where I would, you know, I think with that band, I got involved to the point where I was just sort of like helping them, like, with everything. It wasn't like I was, you know, I was on the street with them handing out flyers the day that they got the Disney radio break, you know, and, you know, we would go and we would hand flyers out, you know, at Jonas Brothers events. It's just like,
we all want to feel our best, but let's be real. Some wellness trends are hard to stick with. Taking shots of apple cider vinegar? No thanks. Swallowing giant vitamins? Not for me. Goalie Nutrition is wellness made easy and delicious with their chewable gummies. From apple cider vinegar for digestion support to ashwagandha for stress relief, Goalie's gummies fit effortlessly into your routine. They're made with high quality ingredients, taste amazing, and are packed with essential B vitamins to help you feel your best every day. Apple cider vinegar has been used for centuries as a traditional remedy for digestion and gut health, now in a convenient gummy form. More than just ACV, from ashwagandha for stress relief, plus they're packed with essential vitamins, organic ingredients, and no artificial nonsense. No mixing, measuring, or mess. Just grab, chew, and conquer your day. Made for every lifestyle with a formula that works for you. Plus, they're made in the USA. Loved worldwide. So head to goalie.com now and get America's number one ashwagandha and apple cider vinegar gummies at an exclusive 42% off. Give them a try, risk-free. Backed by their money-back guarantee. Because wellness should be simple, effective, and delicious. Don't wait. Visit goalie.com today. Sometimes it can be hard eating healthy when you're feeling like you're giving up flavor or fun. That's where I have a food hack for you. Washington Red Raspberries are a clean, simple, and seriously delicious way to add more nutrition to your day. They're American grown, picked at peak ripeness, and frozen within hours to lock in nutrients like fiber, antioxidants, and vitamin C. And they have no added sugar, just fruit. As nature intended. I try to get my fruit in all fun ways, whether it's a smoothie, a salad, it's really just a treat. Frozen Washington Red Raspberries are one of the best kept secrets in the freezer aisle. They're naturally low in sugar, high in fiber, and support gut health, blood sugar balance, and overall wellness. And because they're frozen at the peak of ripeness, they deliver big time nutrition and flavor year round. So whether you're trying to clean up your snacks or build better meals, these berries are a total win. You can find frozen Washington Red Raspberries in the frozen fruit section of most major grocery retailers. And Costco. If you want to discover new ways to use American frozen red raspberries, get more details on where you can grab them simply by going to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. You'll find recipes, health tips, retail locations, and everything you need to make Washington Red Raspberries a regular part of your routine.
Look for product of the U.S.
Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is simple. Fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a chat-based telehealth consultation.
If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. I do have a few friends who have used GLP-1, and it helps get them on the right path to sustain a healthier lifestyle. It's helped with weight loss and confidence. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game right now, my listeners can get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with my code LIGHTWEIGHT at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use code LIGHTWEIGHT to get $50 off your first month of GLP weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. Get started today.
which is like crazy. Because now, obviously, you know, everything's come full circle, and we've just released a song with Busted and the Jonas Brothers because there was that connection with Year 3000. And it's just really wild, all of the things. I mean, you remember, and even after All Star Weekend, there was that other band that my brother was in.
Hollywood Ending.
Yeah, and I was around for some of that when they would tour on the West Coast.
You brought them out with you too.
Well, that was later on.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like before I knew that I would be in a band again, because I didn't think that I would. And I was almost just like, I don't know, like an uncool, you know, older brother that happened to be in their bus or, you know, and not tour bus, like School of Rock minivan.
15 passenger, white van, broken down tire.
Yeah. And I remember like we were somewhere in Anaheim at like 7 a.m. And I don't know why it was so early or what the reason was, but we were in Anaheim and we were driving around some back streets looking for where we were going. And they were just like right in the middle of the grind of being on tour, like venues like House of Blues and those kinds of places. And One Direction is sort of like starting to really happen. And they're like, oh, it'd be so good to like get on a One Direction tour. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe I know someone who knows someone that can like make a connection for them. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out who it is that I can call. And fast forward, not even that long, maybe 3 years, like I'm on tour with One Direction, like in Australia. And it was just like, you know, with my band. And I'm thinking that there is no way that I could have predicted that, you know, because the resurgence of getting back to Busted by way of, you know, this kind of like amalgamation band with McFly, which was another thing. It's like with McFly, it was like the beginning of that band. I was very involved and in the songs and everything. And it just was like a crazy story, because in those years, in those sort of 9 years that I was, it's like the best part of a decade, I was really just, I had sort of accepted that as an artist, it was finished for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I did not think that I would do anything again, like on that level. And so I'd sort of resorted to writing musicals and writing songs for other people and gravitating just towards people that creatively inspired me, you know, just to make music, not even to release it, just to make it. And to be back in a place where, you know, to be touring at this level now and to be, you know, doing the things that I'm doing now, I just feel like unbelievably grateful for it, you know.
Was that hard for you to accept in your mind at that time?
You know, it wasn't hard to accept, but I had accepted it. It wasn't like I thought, oh, well, I've had enough fun to last me forever anyway. Like, I've had enough fun to last me a lifetime. You know, I would have been happy with just the first round stuff, you know. So it wasn't, no, and it wasn't really that hard. It was, but it was unbelievably, like, refreshing for me when it came back. And I did not expect it, you know.
So you announced your comeback with Busted.
Yeah.
You guys sold 100,000 tickets in the first hour saying that Busted was doing another tour.
Yeah, I mean, what's weird is that now there's actually been two comebacks. Because, so I don't actually know what one you're talking about.
I think in 2016, right? Or 2017?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the first one. Now you just told me you have another tour coming up, sold out.
Yeah.
200,000 tickets sold in the UK.
Yes.
It's bananas.
Yeah, it's crazy.
From the outside perspective, you're saying that you never thought you'd have that chance again. But from my perspective, I'm always like, when are they coming back?
Yeah, no, I never thought we would. I didn't think we would. It's wild, yeah.
You mentioned on a previous podcast when you found out that moment that Busted had a chance of coming back together, the original trio.
Mm-hmm.
What was that feeling when you heard those words?
Sorry, what was this? This is when I spoke to Charlie.
Yes.
Yeah.
The day of the McBusted concert.
That's right. Yeah, that was the first time. Well, he had already... Well, there were a couple times where we had... Matt and I had maybe an opportunity to do something, just the two of us. And we figured, well, if he never wants to do it again, it would be a shame to never play those songs again. So we would entertain it. And Charlie would, all, you know, the three of us owned the band. It belongs to all of us. So his third ownership in the band was sort of, you know, something... If he wanted it not to happen, it was sort of his right to say so, right? And you kind of had to, like, respect that. So we did. And finally, I think the McFly thing, what was so unique about it was when I showed up at the McFly show just as a friend, you know, it was like I was just there because they're my friends. When they suggested I should go and play some songs acoustically, I didn't know that it was going to turn into... You know, some like Susan Boyle moment. You know? I didn't know it was gonna be, you know, because that's what it was like. You know, it was like going out, you know, by myself and playing some songs that really I hadn't even had a chance to rehearse. It's just the only reason I knew how they went was because I had written them and I play them from time to time in my bedroom. So it wasn't like I prepared for that at all. And I didn't know it was going to go down that way. So with the excitement of that, the offer that Busted had was not Busted. It was to sing, but originally it was to sing Busted songs with McFly. So that was something that would have happened anyway. Like with or without the Busted name, that could have happened. And I think that when I met with Charlie, you know, he sort of understood that it, what we were doing was something else. And I said, look, even though it's not Busted, we still want to use the name. You know, we still want to, you know, everyone knows what Busted is and everyone knows those songs. And, you know, maybe we can come to an agreement. And we did, you know. And, but he said that, you know, for the first time ever at that, when I, you know, maybe I'd think about doing it again. But I'm not sure, like, you know, how keen he was on the McBusted thing, because I think he was worried, or maybe he thought that it, you know, would... A lot of people didn't... You know, that's the truth. There's like, a lot of people didn't know that McBusted would work. A lot of people thought that... and to be honest, I don't think, you know, when we made the album, I don't think it did work. I thought that, you know, I thought the two bands lost each, like, identity of each other. Like, touring... When we could like play each other's songs was amazing. It was like the most fun I've ever had on tour, right? But when we made music together, it sort of felt like, I don't know, it just sort of felt like it wasn't a no-brainer. Sort of felt like there were other questions that were unanswered, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
By that, just felt like there were some unanswered questions that we, you know, no one really stopped to think about because it was going so well. But, you know, when Charlie said, you know, maybe if you wait a year, I'll do it with you. And I said, well, that's crazy, because I would love to do. I would love to do Busted, you know, as Busted originally was. I would love to do that. And but I didn't want to stop what was happening with McFly, because I had a connection with those songs, too. So for me, like in some ways, touring with McFly and Busted together was sort of. In a way, the ultimate way to come back, because it was a celebration of everything, and but sort of marketed around the absence of Busted, because it was, you know, the thing that had been gone missing. And it went so well that it kind of segued into Busted When the Time Was Right. And wild story, isn't it?
Crazy.
Don't you think it's a bit mental?
Especially the fact that you had songwriting on McFly's debut album, no?
Yeah, like, yeah.
You were so heavily involved in both these projects, and now they came together and it paved the way for the comeback.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. It was like the Stargate back to Busted was created in like 2004 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just formulating.
Yeah.
If that's the word.
But you could never have predicted.
No.
Yeah.
Hang on, I just got to restart the canvas.
Yeah.
So you guys broke up at the height. Busted broke up at the height of everything.
Yeah, in 2005, January.
What did that feel like for you? Because your songs, your creations were out there. People were loving it. And then you're suddenly being told you have to stop.
So like, it was like January 14th, 2005.
3 days before my birthday.
Yeah. Well, I remember like I left the press conference and there were three cars outside to take us home. And it was like, oh, it's so depressing. It's like, oh, oh. Why are we talking about this?
Do you want to skip it?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
I mean, what I'm saying is...
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
I mean, look, it is, I guess it is interesting to talk about it. But the thing that was so strange about that day is you're right. We were sort of bringing the guillotine down on our band. And I didn't really understand it completely. I couldn't really make sense of what was going on because it was so strange. You know, we'd sort of accomplished everything more than what we would ever dream of doing. And it wasn't like it was slowing down. I mean, I actually believe that we would have conquered America. You know, we could have done that.
You sold me.
Yeah. I mean, like, we were starting to come out here and everything. It's just, you know, the song was going to radio. We had a TV show on MTV, America or Busted.
How'd that do?
It did well on MTV in England.
Yeah.
Because, like, that was our place. But in America, it wasn't on MTV, like, everyone knows it. It was on MTV 2. Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it was on, like, MTV 2. And, but I would go, but when I went snowboarding the Christmas before the January broke up, people had seen me on the show. So it was like people in America, some people did see it. It wasn't as, it didn't reach as many people as like normal MTV, but it did reach people, I think.
Yeah.
But like it was actually like getting bigger. So, and when I got home from the press conference, I turned on the television and we were on it, you know. The videos were still on the music channels and our television show was still on MTV. And it was really weird to sort of see that and go, but it's done. Do you know what I mean?
What kind of press was there saying how it was done, where you had to end this, now you're seeing everywhere it's over? What does that do to you? Did that affect you?
Yeah, it just sort of felt like a big shame. It sort of felt like, oh, this is some weird alternate Back to the Future reality, you know, where Biff got the got the time machine and changed the future for the worse. You know, it was like,
yeah,
this, but you know, the press that we got around splitting up was, cause I don't know if you, have any experience in this stuff, but bad news travels really fast and far.
Oh yeah.
Like it just like goes. So in a way the band sort of got more famous when we broke up that month. I mean, it was in everything, you know, there's the most press we'd ever had. And, the press conference that we did was like completely full up, and they only had like a 3 days notice to like get people there. But it was like a complete, when we came out to sit down, it was like, you know, a lot of people there. And, yeah, it was like, you know, I definitely felt like everyone knew when it happened, you know, in England.
Right.
Yeah.
What was your day-to-day like once that happened? What did you do?
So I just, not a lot. Just, I actually played Grand Theft Auto.
Three? Or Vice City?
Vice City.
Great game.
I think it was Vice City, yeah. I think it was Vice City. And, on the Xbox. And I was just, I did that for about 2 months. I mean, you know, like my, I remember my phone was just, it was nonstop. It was like vibrating across the floor. Like just always like, you know, when phones vibrate, they kind of move.
Yeah.
I just remember like, I have a memory of like playing the Grand Theft Auto and the phone is just like, it was one of those like Sony flip phones.
Yeah, like the oval shaped type thing at the bottom.
Yeah. Like I remember it's going, you know, the phone's just like going.
Yep.
But, you know, I was also, it was weird because.
Can you just bring it a little closer?
Yeah, sorry. It was weird because I had like all this time. I had no idea what to do with it. So people were like, why didn't you go on holiday? But I was like, I can't go on holiday. I don't know what it is. I should do that, but I can't do that because it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel normal to go and sit on a beach somewhere. I felt like I had other things to do. And I, even though it was just in my apartment playing video games, it sort of felt like, it sort of felt like I had to stay in London for some reason, you know?
Were you almost hoping maybe there'd be a call to come back?
No, I wasn't thinking that. I definitely knew that the band was finished. But I knew that I wanted to keep recording, you know?
And that was the birth of Son of Dork.
Yeah.
How quickly did you come to terms to create Son of Dork after that?
Kind of fast. Because I kept writing. I kept like songwriting.
By yourself or with other people?
Sometimes by myself, sometimes with other people. It would depend. I mean, I'll write with anybody. You know, doesn't matter. I've written songs with people that have never written songs before. Like I'll write a song with someone that has no songwriting ability and that will be the only song that person will ever write.
Yeah.
But like, I actually kind of get a kick out of that. I like doing that. But then I'll write songs with people who are incredible songwriters. So, yeah, I quite like the sport of songwriting.
I wanted to ask you, because you do so much songwriting for other people.
Yeah.
Backstreet Boys, The Vamps, Five Sauce.
Well, the Backstreet Boys actually never got released, but it did get recorded.
That's what I wanted to ask. Yeah. But it seems like you're so into the art of songwriting anyway. I was going to ask if it hurts you in a way that you put your darkest emotions, your deepest emotions into these songs and you can't release them. But it seems like you just love the process of the writing so much.
Well, in a way, they're released when they're created, you know, because that song is released from you. It's not released into the system. It's not it's not gone through DistroKid, but it's released from you, you know?
Yeah.
Songs like come, you know, when people who don't have that relationship with making music or creating songs, they think of songs as songs they hear on Spotify. I've got songs that I've never recorded. I have like a backed up traffic jam of songs in my mind that is like, you know, there's probably 1,000 songs that I haven't recorded.
Are you constantly just thinking of things? Are you thinking of songs right now?
No, not right now, but I'm always thinking of songs. Like if I'm driving around or if I'm, you know, in a moment where I'm by myself, like I'm never bored, you know. I'm kind of like keeps me thinking.
Do you have to be in a happy state of mind to write a happy poppy song?
I think it helps, but I don't think you have to be. Because you could write a lyric that could be kind of dull, and when you go to record it, you could be in a different mood, and sometimes a happy production with a dull lyric might work. So there's a lot of places, you know, songs can change shape at different points in the process, you know. I definitely easily come up with maybe 2 or 3 ideas a day, you know. And some of them won't be good, and some of them will never see the light of day. Most of them will never see the light of day because I won't record them. Like, I've never gone to the studio and thought, I don't have anything to record, you know?
You wrote the year 3000?
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing how the Jonas Brothers acquired that song?
Yeah. So it was a hit for Busted. And when Busted ended, there are a lot of people in the music business who are transatlantic people, executives who are in London and they're in New York, right? And there was this guy, Dave Massey, who when we showcased for Sony in London, he was there. But he, in the time since Busted had happened, he was in New York. And in 2006, he called me randomly. The phone call just came in, and I picked up, and it was Dave Massey. And he was asking if, you know, I knew Nick Jonas from before because he'd recorded a song of mine before when he was a lot younger. I think he did like a Christian record. And Dave was like, can we record Year 3000 with the Jonas Brothers? Because Nick's going to do, we're going to do a thing with his brothers. We're going to put them together sort of like in a Busted kind of way. And I was like, yeah, I don't think you need my permission to do that. Because you don't need permission to sing someone's song, right?
Right.
So he said, yeah, well, we want to like put it on Radio Disney, and Radio Disney don't want to say she's pretty fine. And there's a couple of other things that just they want to change.
Triple-breasted women.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I don't want to stop it from happening. And I don't want to stop you from doing the song. But I also don't really want to go and rewrite the song either, because I like it the way it is. But if you can figure out what works for those things, maybe you just do that. But no publishing, because the song's already, you know, the song's the song. Anyone can like change out a couple words, you know. So I didn't think I would ever hear about it ever again. And then it happened.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So you have the publishing for that version as well?
Yeah, the publishing's the publishing. And you know, that doesn't change. Publishing is like land. And the recorded music is like a house on the land. So when they recorded the song, it's their record. It's their master, but it's our land.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. So interesting. And then the song blew up. You guys just did Year 3000 2.0, where you featured the Jonas Brothers on it.
Yeah, we had to do that. You know, we were doing this cool idea where people were featuring on our songs, and obviously some people are easier to get than others, and Jonas Brothers are probably at the top of that get list. And we thought, look, if, you know, we're going to look really lame if we do this features album and we can't get the Jonas Brothers. like we have all this like crazy, we have this crazy, we're sort of connected through this song. And, you know, we had all these artists like celebrating the 20 year anniversary. But the thing is, the Jonas Brothers are just very, they're really classy people. And they're really, you know, they're very gracious, and, you know, they wear their success really well, and they were just really cool about it and made it happen.
That's sick.
Yeah.
Your 20th anniversary album featuring all those artists is such a cool idea. I haven't seen it from anyone else, but you have such
when we first spoke about it, I was thinking, we're never going to be able to do that.
To get those people?
Yeah, you would never, like, because how do you even arrange that? Organize that? And also, 11 months ago, none of this was even on the cards. No comeback, no, like 11 months ago, actually, I thought the band was finished 11 months ago. I didn't think, we spoke about doing something else because our last thing was before the pandemic. And there was no sign of any of this stuff. So I don't know how the hell it happened. But, you know, it wasn't my idea to do this. I mean, do I think it's a great idea? Yeah. Like, I probably would have suggested it if I thought it was possible. But I think, you know, we went back with our original manager and he suggested it. And when he suggested it, I was like, it's a great pipe dream.
But I mean, All Time Low, Simple Plan, Neck Deep, Jonas Brothers. Yeah. The list is insane.
Bowling for Soup, Wheatus, James Arthur. Yeah, it's Yumi at Six, Death of Anna. I mean, yeah, it's like, it's a real, like, it's a really, like, incredible list of people. I think that what was weird about it, I think even if any member of Busted had said it, it wouldn't have happened. I don't think that any of us believe that any of us could make that happen. Like, the fact that our manager said it, and I was like, yeah, that's definitely a big thing. But maybe if each member of the band focused on three people, it's a lot of emails.
Yeah.
It's a lot of chasing. It's a lot of like getting like people to like agree. And even when they agree, like we got people to agree and then they change their minds. I mean, that list is really good, but it could have been much worse. But it could have been much, we were aiming for the stars.
Can you share anyone's names you were aiming for?
Well, yeah, we were speaking to, I don't want to like people to think that there's any bad blood or anything. Cause there isn't. But no, we were like, you know, we were talking about some insane stuff, and, you know, thankfully, I mean, when an act like the Jonas Brothers or people like people that have like, you know, 25, 30 million monthly listeners on Spotify are saying, okay, we're like amazing, you know.
I know you're a massive Michael Jackson fan.
Yeah.
Is there any thought of having like a recorded track from him on one of your songs?
Well, I don't know. I think that, we would never think of him because he's not alive, but people are doing this thing with AI now where they're just sort of like, you know, but I don't know. I think what we wanted to do is we wanted to reach out to people that we felt like actually made sense. But people that don't make sense probably are even better. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, that would be stupid to even just to get some sounds, you know, even if he came to the studio for a day and just made those noises, you know, if he was alive, that would be funny, you know, or like different. I think people like, people just want to hear like different stuff now. They want, you know, and they don't mind if it's like a song that they like, if they can hear a different version of it, they'll stream it or they'll listen to it. It's weird because I will always want to go after new songs. The thrill of like making new music is sort of outweighs this stuff for me. There was sort of like a feeling when we were doing the re-records where I was like, is that better? You know, should I care? And it's, you know, a lot of the songs, you know, they sound different. Sometimes it's like, oh, I prefer that about the original, but I prefer that about the new one, you know? But we spoke about, you know, some really, really stupid stuff. I mean, we never actually even asked her, but we have a song on our first album called Britney, and we were going to do Britney, Feet Britney.
That'd be sick.
Yeah, yeah. We wanted to do that, but we didn't. I don't think we even ended up asking her because we were so swamped with the people we were asking and if it was going to happen. And yeah, it was, let's just say it was a lot of like, I think if people will probably see that and they'll probably attempt to do it and they're going to just, it's like thousands of emails chasing because no one that's doing it, it's not, when you're trying to get people to do something that isn't on their radar or on their agenda, it's often harder to make those things happen.
Right. So you guys have an arena tour coming up now.
Yeah.
How many dates is it?
27.
Are you beyond thrilled to get back on the road?
Yes.
Do you guys all share a bus?
Yes.
Do you have those? Do you think it'll be those same memories as when you guys went out 20 years ago?
No.
How is it different?
It's just different.
Is it more calm down in a way?
Yeah, it's calm down. Yeah.
What was the bus like 20 years ago?
Hectic. I would bring people on tour that I'd meet on holiday, you know, and they would know nothing about the band.
Yeah.
I would meet them snowboarding. And I'd be like, you want to come and see my band play? But like, yeah, yeah, come on the bus. And they would get to England and they would scratch their head and they would be like, wait, are you opening up for anyone or is this your show? Which is funny. Because I would not be allowed to snow. If we had a tour coming up in like, you know, March at Christmas, I'm not allowed to snowboard. So I wasn't allowed to take my little brother on all of the dangerous snowboarding slopes. And there was this guy getting on the, you know, guy looked like my age, total like snowboarder. I was like, can you go up with him? Because I can't. And he went up with him and I made friends with him. I was like, yeah, come on tour. And he did. Like, so there would be always like maybe four or five people like that that are just kind of on the road, you know, that want to just, you know, go to the parties afterwards. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely not as hectic anymore. I'm sure it'll be fun. There's always something funny that happens, you know?
Can you see, what do you see for after the tour? Any plans of more new music?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. More music.
Sign a Dorker Union?
You know, it's really funny because it's been like 20 years.
It's time.
And I, you know, I think for the 100 people that would like it, it would be really fun.
On behalf of them, yes.
Yeah. Because maybe there's 100 people that want to see that.
I think there's way more.
What? This is so stupid. What do you think the number is? I think it's 100.
Oh, I think it's way higher. I think you're underestimating it.
What do you think?
40,000?
No,
if, I think
no. You. That's not true.
I really do.
No,
I really.
I completely disagree with you.
Those songs are so special.
I cannot imagine that there is that kind of numbers of people that would care. I also feel like you. It's one thing thinking about the 100 people that care. It's another thing. And that, by the way, those 100 people, they're all scattered everywhere. So reaching them all at the same time is really hard. I don't probably think, they probably don't even all follow me on Instagram, those 100 people. You know what I mean? I mean, I will say, like, there has been the most weirdest times where people have said, I love your band. And, you know, it's like 1 in 100 people, they surprise me and they say Son of Dork and they don't say Busted. And I'm always really surprised when that happens because I don't think about it at all. But it's odd because Son of Dork really is the beginning of Loserville, which was the musical that, has done so well around the world. This year, like the Loserville musical, you know, it sold 60,000 tickets in Japan.
Wow.
And I went to that. I was flown out by the producers and I went to Tokyo and I walked into a sold out theater that was being sold out twice a day. 1,500 people in a big, you know, it wasn't small, it was big. And I watched my musical in Japanese translated, the songs, the lines that people say, like all Japanese. I didn't understand a word of it, but I kind of knew what was happening because I know what's happening. But, you know, a lot of bands that have musicals spawned from the bands, you know, the bands that kind of have that, it's like Queen or Meatloaf or, you know, The Who. It's always, there's like big, like classic rock bands that kind of tend to cross over into like the musical world. But then again, you've got ABBA did really well with it. But the fact that I think we're the only punk pop band that has fans in that thing that have a musical that's done that well. I mean, which is crazy.
Yeah.
It is a crazy story. That's its own thing. That's like its own podcast.
I know. I want to ask you so much, but I don't want to take up so much of your time.
Yeah. But, the Son of Dork thing. The Son of Dork thing, I will show you something.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is just a pipe dream. Okay? Because I'm always thinking of things and I'm always coming up with ideas.
Oh, wow. Wow.
If there was going to be an album.
That's sick.
I mean, I just thought it was I don't know it will happen, but I've definitely got more than enough songs for it. I would know, I think I have probably 20 to 30 solid, like pop punk, Son of Dork style songs to like choose from for that, if I was going to do that. But everything's so full on, everything's so busy, and Busted is like on fire. So, but I don't know.
Cool.
I'm not gonna, you know, if Busted went away tomorrow, maybe, you know, but I'm quite happy doing Busted.
So are we. James, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah.
Very excited for everything with you. Everyone, is it this tour sold out so people can't even get tickets?
The tour sold out, but we added extra dates on top of the extra dates. So I feel like if you're really trying to go to the end of the tour. Yeah.
Any plans to come to America and play, the three of you?
No plans right now, but I think that it'd be fun. I just don't know.
Cool. Thanks so much for being here, James. Lightweights out. Thank you. That was great.